For January the 7th, 2022, we talk about Aliens Fireteam Elite, Mortal Shell, Metroid Dread, and more. Welcome to Level 398. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I am David Mysmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Back again for the first time in 2022. Welcome back, listener. And welcome back, assembled co-hosts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good to be back.
Missing Jala. It is nice to be back. Although I did enjoy the time off.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to rest up for round three of years decidedly trying to kill us.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just years that are just a constant reminder of mortality and how little is in our control. I didn't want to start out at a bummer, but there we are.
No, it's reverse psychology. Like, you know, we went into 2020 like, this is it! Two nat 20s, let's go! And it sucked. And then 2021 was, surely nothing can be worse than 2020, and 2021 sucks. So this, I'm like all down on 2022. It's going to be the worst thing ever, and I'm going to trick it. Well, yeah. I'm not going to say it because I don't jinx it.
But. We're right-sizing expectations.
Interesting fact. You only have like a 0.1% chance in a given year of society collapsing. However, if you look at like historically, how often societies have collapsed, stuff like that. If you do the... it's like cumulative distribution or whatever that equals out to a 30% chance of society collapsing at some point in your life.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean,
when was the last society collapse?
I mean, they're... I believe World War II.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say like
it might have been fall of the Soviet Union, one of those two.
Syria. Pretty big deal. What's going on in Ethiopia? Hey, there are all kinds of, you know, what is considered society.
Hey guys, I heard we live in a society. Did you know that?
Bottom text. Yeah.
You know, just like at any given point in time, there's thousands of people having sex. At any given point in time, there's a couple places in the world falling apart.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Happy 2022.
Yeah. the last time we spoke, it was for Duckstream. I don't have the final tally just yet, but it was a rousing success. And I want to thank everybody who tuned in, and thank Adam Bucheri for DMing the fun hijinks that we did, the tabletop there. Yeah.
Big props for creating a game on the fly and being a great DM.
Yeah, no, he is really, I've thrown him some curveballs. You know,
like seizing the means of production.
Okay, in fairness, because each of the characters has a dangerous idea that they can choose. Like he had a list, like a drop down list of suggestions. That was just one that was in there.
Oh, nice, nice.
So I took it.
I just really love the idea of like your group is playing as a horde of kobolds, and at any given time, you know, you're pulling out the one character that stands out, but the mentality is like, I don't care if any of these die, we are the horde, we will do the thing. And
yeah,
that's just like, how fun is that? That was really cool.
Yeah, who knew that kobolds had a hive mind?
Yeah, that was fun. Just while we're doing business kind of stuff, Dennis, are we gonna have the toady poll up?
Time people are listening to this, you will be able to go to our Facebook page or our various presences and find the title of the year poll, where you can browse through all the titles from the past year, which I did when you sent the list, Cole, and it's always good for many, many laughs.
Yes.
A list of joy. And vote on your favorites. See which one rises to the top, both the titles that you've seen on the podcast, and also our annual list of alternate titles that were suggested but didn't quite make it in, which I think we've gotten in a stinger at the end of these. But you might not might not remember some of them as readily as the main titles.
Yeah, it's the most self-indulgent thing we do each year, but it is but it is a good time. Figure we give people 2 weeks to do that.
Do you think that sounds about right?
Yeah. Cool. But no, so I mean, like, it's been a while since we talked, so this is probably gonna go for a while. I didn't I don't have too much to like report. I just like I took a bunch of time for myself, and good. I remarked about this to Gary earlier, but like Cole on vacation is, especially at home, is visually indistinct from Cole working, but it was a real it's a bummer. I had the Christmas at my dad's. That was up ended because some people were sick. No COVID, mm-hmm. Thankfully. It was just a general bug, but it's better to be safe. But yeah, had a good good time kind of hanging out and playing stuff for fun, which it's not really just for fun, because I will talk about it on the show here. It will be turned into content. But
see, for a moment there, I thought you're going with like, oh yeah, it was a bummer. I had Christmas with my dad. I'm like, man, I've met your dad. Like, yeah. that's kind of hard.
No, I love my dad. It's just I haven't seen that side of the family in a while.
I mean that. So I my parents were vacationing for Christmas, so didn't do that. But you know, I went up for Thanksgiving, and that had been the first time I'd seen, like, anyone except for my direct, you know, my mother and father, in my family for like 2 years, something mm-hmm. like that.
Well,
yeah. We did Orphan Christmas. So like a whole bunch of my friends that, you know, don't have a family or estranged from family, stuff like that, all got together and, did Christmas. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah. Nice.
Orphan Christmas is a much bigger bummer of a name than Friendsgiving.
Yeah, I was going to say, we need a better portmanteau. Friendsmas is too on the nose.
Oh man. Anything else cool go on while you're kicking back, David?
But the one funny thing with that is it was kind of funny because, yeah, I'd be like, oh, you know. People would be like, yeah, I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm not seeing my family for Christmas. They're like, oh, that's so sad. It's like, not. They're on a cruise in the Caribbean. Like, it's totally fine.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is not something to be sad about.
Nice. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I had a good time. I was back in Ohio. I think I was when we recorded the DMing and stuff, or when we were doing the charity stream for the weekend, I was back in Cincinnati, so I got to see family, got to see some friends. That was really nice. I had delayed travel back home, which I complained about off air. I took my nephew to a movie, which was the first movie he ever saw, and he promptly freaked out about the loud noises and the dark lights. So that lasted about 5 minutes,
okay.
But that was still fun. I took him grocery shopping and then freaked out that people would recognize that I wasn't his father and thought I was abducting him.
Oh,
because that's how my brain thinks.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest, Ben, you do have that look about you.
Yeah. Yeah. But I had a good New Year's, got to see some friends. So all in all, a nice break.
Not bad. Yeah. What movie did he get upset and dash out of?
So it was Spider-Man, but it was happening like even in the trailers before. And it was something I didn't really think about, you know, because I wasn't aware of like noise sensitivity until somebody was like sensitive to it. So it's like, mm-hmm.
I always take earplugs to the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hindsight 2020. We should have done that as well.
Hindsight 2021.
Yeah, that too.
Nice.
On the plus side, Spider-Man is an amazing movie.
I'm waiting for it to come to streaming because I'm a big old scaredy cat. But I'm happy. Like I have also heard that from other folks. Did you get a chance to reschedule and go see it, Ben?
I did not, but I saw Licorice Pizza instead. That was good.
What is Licorice Pizza?
It's a Paul Thomas Anderson movie. So it's kind of like Inherent Vice, but with kids. Yeah. Which sounds bad. Less illicit things as well.
Say, did you take your nephew to it?
No. Here, Parker. This doesn't have any loud noises.
Nice. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, it was a good holiday. Did the whole seeing family and holiday cheer rigmarole. I'll talk about other presents that I got during the show. But one that I thought you guys would appreciate is I got a SodaStream.
Ooh,
for nice. Christmas. Ooh. And my water consumption has promptly jumped about 16-fold, I think. I am well hydrated boy now.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. I have to imagine they've gotten a lot better in the past. Like, it's been 8 years since I got mine. Like, it's been a stalwart.
Yeah, it's like the thing I was impressed with, I don't know why I thought it was going to plug in.
Okay.
But I just kind of assumed it was an appliance that plugged into the wall. But it's not. It's got a little CO2 canister that you hook up, and that's all it needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why that struck me as profoundly as I did. But it was like, here is an appliance that does not require electricity. This is mind blowing.
Yeah, no.
I can use this in the apocalypse. At least as long as the CO2 canister lasts.
It would take a lot of work to compress the CO2 into the canister.
Just blow real hard, I'm sure.
Is it still proprietary?
I have no idea on that canisters. The one that shipped with it was. I have not looked into needing a replacement.
Yeah.
Okay, because that's the main thing that's kept me from getting one is I don't like the idea of having to buy specifically their canisters.
Yeah.
Don't like the razor blade model.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen modifications that people have done where they have they have connected it to, you know, they have like a nozzle and connected it to like a larger, just basic CO2 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Hi, Dottie.
But it's one of those things where I think I've always drank that much bubbly water or wanted to drink that much bubbly water, but you mm-hmm. feel bad opening six individual cans over the course of a day.
It's money. And then it's also like cans, you know, like they mm-hmm. just when it is broken down like that, and like 12 ounces mm-hmm. of water, you know, it's better than nothing, but also it's not an awful lot mm-hmm. in comparison to, you know, what you ought to be.
Yeah, screw that. I'm cranking out liters at a time now. Let's go.
See, I feel like that would just result in me getting diabetes.
Oh no, I am not making pop.
No. Yeah, that's the thing. The most that I put in it whenever I think to refill the canister, or take it in to be swapped, the most that I do is a little bit of lime juice, to activate it.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I like it. Go ahead.
Oh yeah, I cannot do the sparkling water stuff. That stuff is vile.
Oh.
Yeah. I like to flavor it, you know, like the traditional sparkling waters are, very lightly. So I'll fill the liter bottle and then I'll set it next to a lemon in the fridge for about 4 minutes and then pull it out.
Yeah,
it's it's about the right buzz.
Yeah, it's basically whispering the word lime into it, and then you're good.
So does it work? Could you like put vodka in there and like have it carbonate vodka?
I think that would be a really bad idea. I think that the different density would mess it up. I've heard horror stories of people trying to carbonate stuff that was already carbonated, etc.
Yeah, it has to have been tried. I'm confident that we are not the first people to think of that, but I have no idea what the result would be.
I wouldn't want to mess around with anything that pressurized. Yeah.
Oh, it sounds like you in fact can do it with vodka.
Okay.
Neat.
Today I learned.
It's a vodka soda. Well, is it the vodka or the soda? Yes.
Oh man. Yeah. Well, I think that we should talk about some video games now that we've mm-hmm. now that we have caught up. So I think in order to do that, we need to do the regular kind of show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, since you alluded to other video gifts that you had gotten, I will throw it to you first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the big one that I am incredibly excited about is I got a digital pinball table for Christmas.
Oh shit, nice.
Whoa. Yes. And it is fantastic. So I've wanted one of these forever. I got the Legends pinball table by At Games, or maybe it's AT Games. I don't know. There's actually a company in Cincinnati that makes them. It's called VP Cabs. And I had looked on it very early on, and hadn't pulled the trigger because I was like, all the tables that I looked at had a button for the plunger, and I wanted an analog plunger.
Okay.
So I was like on the verge of getting one. It was a couple $100, and I held off. And then they went on Shark Tank, and their cheapest table became a couple $1,000.
Ooh.
Because they were very successful there. And so, ooh, I was like, well, that was my window. All right. Yeah. Guess I won't do that. But Jen found this. It's a very reasonably priced for what it is. It's got everything. It's got the analog plunger. It has accelerometers so you can bump the table. It's got haptic feedback. It's the whole package.
Nice.
And it is super cool. Came loaded with a bunch of pinball tables, and then you can also get a subscription for a service, because that's what everything is now.
Of course.
But it's hundreds of pinball tables online. And that's like what our family has been doing. Our downstairs, is not quite finished yet. But it's close enough that we put the pinball table down there. And just sporadically throughout the day, over Christmas break, we'd tromp down and get some pinball going and try to get new high scores. And it's just fantastic. You know,
that's awesome.
Jen and I have always enjoyed it. It's simple enough that the kids can play, and everyone has a great time. So,
nice.
Yeah.
What's your favorite table?
In the pack so far, there's one called Class of 1812. I had never heard of it before. And most of the pinball tables, or all the pinball tables, are like remakes of physical pinball tables, which is super cool. And this one I had never heard of before, but the general theme is it's like a monster high school reunion of all these, ancient monsters. But it's also very goofy and 90s. Each monster raps about themselves.
Oh no.
Yes, it is. It is exactly. And then like the multi-ball will start playing I don't know what overture it is, but
that's the 1812. That's the climax of the 1812 overture.
I feel like that one should have kind of hinted you.
Yeah. I'll take that, constructive criticism, but, around the second bar of that, there's a chicken that starts going nowhere else on this table is there a chicken. Nowhere is a chicken alluded to. They just felt like being goofy and put chicken sounds in.
Yeah.
And it is my jam. So the table is good. The theming is good. It is exactly the right level of camp. That's probably the favorite so far. There's one called Wipeout that's snowboarding themed. There's a Formula One themed table that's really good. And even some of like they've got like old kind of classic tables that really are more of the gambling tables and have all the mechanical parts, which is funny to say that it's a real authentic mechanical pinball table on my digital pinball table. But there's one called Central Park that's like really old.
Yeah.
So old the score is the top number of the score is thousands.
Oh yeah.
That's how old it is.
Before the score inflation. Yeah.
Yes, the great score inflation. But those can be fun as well. And I think there's even a couple tables that I still haven't even played. Like we've put a lot of time into it over Christmas break, and I still haven't gotten to everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good. It has also fueled some competitive tendencies in our family. I was out hanging out with friends I was alluding to earlier last night, and got a picture sent to me by Jen of a new high score that she had gotten while I was out.
Ooh,
yeah. Like, okay, that's how it's gonna be, huh? So yeah, it's good times. So that's the big one, is a digital pinball table.
No.
That we are getting a lot of mileage out of.
This the perfect capstone for your basement finishing project, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that is a well done gift on Jen's part. I was ecstatic.
Yeah.
/ am. There were a couple quirks, like, when it came, all the like the default sound settings were so high that the subwoofer would cause the table to kick and tilt.
It would
trigger the accelerometer. So you had to kind of go through and turn things down. But it works fine after that. And the other kink that I don't know if it's just, it comes with that subscription and then you're supposed to, you know, connect it online. I haven't done that because I want to wait to start it until the basement is fully finished and we'll actually be down there more than we even are now.
Yeah.
But every time, if you have multiple people playing the same table, like a four-player game going, if player one sets a new high score on the table, it will immediately kick over to the high score screen for them to enter before the other players go and then end the game.
Oh.
And so it robs everyone else other than, you know, player one of their final ball. And that's happened fairly consistently. So I posted to them and haven't heard back on, you know, what's doing that or how to fix that yet. But I imagine it's a relatively simple remedy because I haven't seen anyone else complaining about it.
Right.
Is that a problem that gets less frequent over time, I guess, or?
It would if you're not consistently setting new high scores.
Which is not great, like I am.
But I guess if like a new game comes out, then it's like the whole problem all over again. Then
yeah,
exactly. Any table that you're trying new, you will have that problem if you're trying it for the first time with multiple players.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was, you know, I like to think there's an easy fix out there for it. I haven't found it yet. If you're not setting high scores, then it's not a huge problem. So we haven't encountered it too much.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, overall, it's been a really cool experience. And just having that like physical pinball table, even though it's a digital screen inside of it, is just so cool. Like that just has a real fun feel, especially when you've got multiple people around it, that you don't get even playing pinball on a screen, even though it's technically the same program happening.
Yeah. That's a nice communal activity, taking turns on that thing. Is it the size of a full pinball table?
No, I think it is a little bit smaller.
Gotcha.
But it's got some heft to it. I'm looking for exact. I pulled up its page. 60 by 44 by 22 inches.
Yeah, yeah. Enough. It is. Yeah. That sounds substantial. Nice.
It doesn't feel mini in any way.
Yeah.
So
this is the same company that is that makes every for the past couple of Christmases. There's been a like an all-in-one arcade cabinet at Sam's Club.
She got it. She got the pinball table from Sam's Club. So
gotcha.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I've been tempted by that thing, but you know my house is small. You know, there's not really like a great place to put it, but it looks like a nice piece of kit. So if it's made by the same people, it sounds good.
Yes, for us to have space requires an extra room. And hey, this is like the one time in our life we'll have that.
Yeah,
so
yeah, you have the basement.
Prime was right.
Yeah, nice.
So that is the Legends Pinball Table by At Games.
I love how many pinball tables are about monster parties.
Yes. It is really a thing.
Yeah. Hey, monsters love to party. It's
gotta party.
Established.
They do.
There's also a table called Bone Busters, which is a very thinly veiled Ghostbusters. I don't know if I want to call it parody table. It's just like an off-brand Ghostbusters.
Yeah, yeah. We have Ghostbusters at home. Off-brand
Ghostbusters was whatever that movie that he made that for hid. I had to abort that joke.
That's fine. Sometimes you have to go into a controlled skid. It's fine. What else, Dennis?
They described Ghostbusters 2 using that language. It was rated as a controlled skid. So I believe your recommendation, Cole, I also dipped into Mortal Shell.
Oh yeah, yeah. That was on the PlayStation Plus, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is some Soulsy goodness right here. Like it really nails the feel of the Soulsborne genre. To a point that it just like it felt so close that I was getting frustrated that everything had a slightly different name. You know, it's like, okay, it's not Souls. It's Tar. It's not a Homeward Bone. It's a, you know, Crystal Mask or, you know, whatever they are.
Yeah.
And there's this whole process you've got to go through of like, okay, well, you know, which analog item is this?
We've gone through that, you know, because we cover a lot of these Souls-likes on Bonfire Side Chat, yeah. right? And you like in the first episode, when we cover the generalities, we say, all right, then, you know, they don't have Estus, they have X, Y, and Z. And we lay it out. Mm-hmm. And then for the rest of it, we just say, oh yeah. And then like, you get your Estus and it's fine. Or there's a bonfire here instead of like the, you know, the bench or whatever it might be.
A lady.
It
is also very Soulsy in that the story is completely opaque. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say, does it stand up? But
the lady, does the lady stand up, or does the story stand up?
No, I'm sorry. Does the story stand up? Sorry, I think I have a little bit of a mic delay, maybe.
I don't know. It's possible. Yeah,
I can get you.
Yeah, but the story is very vague. If I was pressed to describe exactly what was going on, I could not say too much about what was happening, other than there is something about ascension that happens. Like you are some kind of primordial being that is ascending to be something else, and you're being urged along by this kind of creature that acts as your save point, checkpoint kind of person. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're GLaDOS, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would you say if you play Souls games significantly for the story, this would be one to give a pass?
No, I think that it's I think that like this is very interesting in terms of like tone, and there's you go and fight in neat places. This is more about the atmosphere than it is about like the actual like, you know, plot of something like that goes on, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Yeah,
it is very light, but then again, I would say, you know, the Dark Souls games felt that way to me on my first path through as well.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of as you listen to a certain podcast or, you know, replay and really get into item descriptions that it starts to feel like, oh, okay, there's more going on here. Mm-hmm. But it does have a couple really cool original ideas of its own. Your kind of cool new verb is that you can turn into a statue at any point. Whatever, you know, being you are has the ability to freeze. Mm-hmm. Which sounds bad, but is good because you are invulnerable while you're a statue. And you can stay in that state surprisingly long.
Yeah.
Like it is a very forgiving window of, I don't know, probably like 5 to 7 seconds, something like that.
It can be expanded to, and you can do it in the middle of animations.
Yes. And so you can kind of queue up a big, slow attack, freeze in the middle of it to deflect the enemy's attempt to interrupt your attack. And in so doing, kind of stun them and then just unfreeze and finish the attack. And you also, while you are frozen, regain stamina. And so you can get into a really good flow of using it strategically. It's on a cooldown, though. That's the you know, the limiting factor. But yeah, combat feels really, really good. And it felt to me like a happy medium between Bloodborne, which was very aggressive, no shield, no blocking, like go get them, and Dark Souls, which was very you know, sword and boardy. This was kind of a happy medium between those two for me.
Lordy, lordy, sword and boardy.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's the Swedish chef. Swordy, boardy.
Mm-hmm. So that feels good. You do have a parry that you need to charge up by attacking. And, you know, it works normally, but you can only do the riposte if you've charged it up. Those combat systems serve to set it apart a little bit. It also serves to ameliorate the fact that I've only found one other weapon so far. So this definitely hews on the side of Bloodborne in terms of number of weapons.
Yeah.
At least for the first area.
Limited, limited weapons and limited classes, for lack of a better word. I'll lay this out for you, though. You find a weapon at the beginning of each of the major areas that you go to. So like,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would imagine that it's maybe connected to finding another body.
No, the body is your different stats. Like that's like your different class. And there are weapons that go better with different bodies. Any of them could use any of them.
Yeah, and I've been kind of burying the lead on what makes this game different, because right at the start, your base form is kind of just this gray, featureless mass. And then you find a seemingly dead or helpless body on the ground and inhabit it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you kind of put on a skin suit. And when you get to low health, you, instead of immediately dying, and I'm not sure exactly where the lines on this are, you can get knocked out of your body.
Yes.
And then if you can return to it and re-inhabit it before dying, you kind of get a second wind, which was a really nice kind of stopgap between just outright dying and leaving your soul's, excuse me, tar on the ground. And so the exact rules, like, I don't think you can get knocked out of your body multiple times. So if you get back in, you still will die. I don't know if you can get insta-killed if you take a big enough hit on low health, or if you always get knocked out. It's just murky right now.
Yeah, you always get knocked out. There's a limited number of times you can recover, but it's kind of like Sekiro, in that it gives you you have more basically like lives within a given run. And if you die outside of the shell, you start at the you start without your shell, and you have to go get it again.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So and you get the same line from shell? What's that?
Can you fight without the shell? Like, could you do a no shell run?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a thing. Yes,
yeah. People have done that. Yeah.
And I don't think you take hits on your attack power or anything like that. It's just you're on a sliver of health the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can upgrade the shell. So instead of just buying straight stats, you buy skills that seem connected to the specific shell that you're in. I imagine when I get a new shell, they will have a different set of stats or a different set of abilities that you can purchase.
Yeah.
With your souls, which is interesting, and it does kind of guide you towards a certain style of play. for each one.
Yeah.
So that is, I'm fairly early in it. The first area, man, is very maze-like.
Yeah.
And everything kind of connects in weird ways. It was taking me back to the original Dark Souls, in terms of how interwoven everything was. It almost less directed than the original Dark Souls.
What's funny is that area that you're in, that isn't the first area. That is the connective tissue between the dungeons.
So you're kidding me.
That's like your overworld. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say I thought I had found the edge of the area and went into the next area. And then I was like, oh, wait, there was that one little hallway that I don't think I explored. And that led to a whole nother area within the area, an area within the area. And it just goes on and on. So, yes, yeah. It would make sense that it is interconnected, or it is the connective tissue, because it is sprawling and there are a lot of veins and arteries to it. So, cool. Yeah. So I've enjoyed that. And moment to moment gameplay is right at home for any Dark Souls fan. It's got the nice little twists that I mentioned, but this is a good, I want something that hews really close to the inspiring material gaming.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's Mortal Shell. And I've done a couple other small things also related to Christmas. The boys, this is hilarious. Luke and Milo, their present to me was each of them bought a PlayStation controller for them to use.
Yeah. So they wouldn't have to use yours.
Yeah. And now we've previously only had two. So whenever we play Minecraft, it's either me and Jen playing or Luke and Milo playing.
Mm-hmm.
Now on Christmas Day, we took our four controllers and completely restarted the game.
Oh,
new
nice.
Characters for everyone.
Is this Minecraft Dungeon?
Correct. Yes. And that was a ton of fun. Playing all together. The moment to moment is not significantly different, but definitely playing with kids and everyone having their own idea of where they want to go and what they want to do requires some patience.
Yeah.
But it's fun to be back at this stage in Minecraft Dungeons where new loot is frequently better than what you've got. I feel like Jen and I, we're very high level on our original characters, and it's kind of like you've got your build that works. We've each got our lane, and we might upgrade our stuff or, briefly switch to something else just to try a specific build for an event or to you know, make small modifications, but really we're kind of set in our ways. Mm-hmm. Whereas now it's the Wild West, because you're at a stage in our four player game where everyone is progressing so fast that you're quickly running out the usefulness of gear. You don't have the money to endlessly upgrade everything to keep up with you. And so you have to get new weapons and try new things. And so I was running around and having fun doing builds with weapons that I just never would have used if I hadn't have done this reset.
Yeah.
So that's fun. I got Vermintide 2 for Christmas. So thank you, Ben. And have been playing that. I played a little bit with David, a little bit on my own. And beyond the loot crate system, I have yet to really figure out what's different than Vermintide 1. So I'll report back on that once I've got a little more time on it. There are barbarians in the game now. It's like human enemies, but basically they're no different than the rats. And David, you can correct me on this. This will be a good segue because this is my last thing. It's fun. It is you know, the game I remember. But if you would put me into one of the levels and ask me if it was Vermintide 2 or 1, I wouldn't have been able to tell you.
Yeah, I mean, other than, you know, some different special infected or whatever, and the barbarians, I think the biggest change in that respect would probably be each of the characters now has four classes they can be.
Oh, I have not leveled up enough to really see that yet.
Yeah. So more or less each of the characters has a melee class, a ranged class, and then usually two others.
Okay. Very cool. Well,
tank class is one of them. So yeah, tank and something else.
I'll be interested to see how my sword wizard lady is a tank.
So that's the one that I don't think fits that mold because it's kind of always ranged.
Yeah. The character that I'm going with is even the same as the previous game. It's the fire wizard with a little slashy sword. So she's very glass cannon-ish. And, you know, as you use her fireball casting, she builds up heat that can wind up, I think, making her explode if you push it too far.
Yep.
So that's you can either take some damage to offload the heat quicker, or you wait a certain amount of time and it'll dissipate on its own. But yeah, that was a good time kind of jumping back into Vermintide. And we'll see how it evolves. And I think they made this one with much more of a mind to having it be a living game. And I think that's mostly to its benefit versus detriment. I haven't uncovered all the ways how, because I'm early in it.
Nice.
And yeah, that's me.
Cool. Let's see. David, how about you?
Sure. So, let's see. A couple of things, I guess. Get the boring one out first. Well, relatively. I've been continuing on with Warframe, which is no doubt deeply surprising to everyone. they're still doing their basically event where you can unlock, each week you can unlock two of the kind of upgraded versions of the characters, what they call the prime Warframes.
Okay.
And so I've unlocked a number of those. So basically the Volt, which is the electric character, Necros, which is, you know, raising the dead, stuff like that. And then Volcrier, which is like a berserker character.
Okay.
So that's kind of fun. Endgame gear, always good. Probably more interesting, I jumped back into some of the story quests.
Okay.
That I was behind on. So the first one was basically one of the factions, I think I've mentioned in the past, is basically this capitalist cult. So they're called the Corpus, and they basically, imagine if like Ayn Rand became a religion. And
this is
basically sounding what they are. And So one of the missions, you find out that there's a that the founder of this religion is actually trapped in like a time paradox.
Okay.
And I don't know, I kind of forget why. For some reason, you end up trying to rescue him, despite the fact that he's, like, you know, archenemy type of thing.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, that maybe wasn't real well advised, but, you know, nothing your characters really do is that good of an idea.
Of course.
The more interesting one is they released a story mission that's built around the ship-to-ship combat. And so it's basically, you know, you're out adventuring and you discover a ghost ship. By which I don't mean, like, you know, a ghost pirate ship. I mean, like, a ghost spaceship.
Okay.
Ooh. And, you know, you go and, you know, it saves you from, you know, from a enemy ambush, and you eventually go and board it. And, you know, you effectively have to, like, you know, do the whole ghost thing where, like, you have to take care of its unfinished business so that it can, you know, pass on.
Okay.
Wait,
So it's not a ship. It's not a ship that is full of ghosts. It is the ghost of a ship that needs to have its business.
No. It is a fan theorized relationship between two ghosts.
Exactly. Oh,
gotcha. Exactly. Okay. Yes.
No. I mean, you know, it's like the Flying Dutchman, where, you know, the lines kind of blur.
Okay.
You know, so the ship appears where it is needed. You know. I don't know.
Boy, it's not a ship that doesn't text back after the first date.
No.
All right.
No, it's actually quite chatty.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, and probably the highlight of it is this extended, like, survival horde mode that you do that takes place with a really, really excellent sci-fi sea shanty going on over it.
Mm.
I'll track down a link and drop it, but yeah, just some amazing musical work in this. But yeah, eventually you save the ghost ship, you know, right its wrongs or whatever, and, you know, take out the enemy that's been after you. And I think she, with her dying breath, I think she cursed me, so I'm now might be haunted.
How does that manifest in the sci-fi game?
Yeah, this is a very weird sci-fi game. I mean, like I said, this is a sci-fi game where,
right,
like, souls and undead and stuff like that canonically exist.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a sci-fi game that went off the rails a while ago.
Right.
So, let's see here. That's pretty much it for Warframe. The other thing, the new, Aliens, was it Aliens Fireteam or whatever, got added to Game Pass?
Yeah, that was the Aliens Left 4 Dead alike, right?
Exactly. And it's actually pretty solid overall. You know, it's... You know, on the whole, it's, you know, very much is kind of the, you know, the standard Left 4 Dead formula.
What are you trying to accomplish in any given mission? Like, are they different different objectives per each map? Are you trying to escape places? What's going on?
Sure. So there is a story mode. So it's basically your trying to, you know, you're sent in your platoon of Marines or whatever is sent in to this colony that's run by Weyland Yutani, because of course, and you know, is overrun with Xenos, and you're initially you know, trying to you know, get in to evacuate everyone. And then you find a whole bunch of the precursor. Oh, the precursor ruins. I forget whatever the things were from
Prometheus.
Oh, Prometheus.
Mm-hmm.
You find a whole bunch of their ruins, and so you're basically trying to now figure out what's going on. And, you know, if something needs to be nuked from orbit.
I mean, always, but...
I mean, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's the only way to be sure, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But overall, I think the best part of it is, you know, it seems like they really lean into, you know, trying to, you know, have it be... You know, the aliens' world, the aliens' tone... you know, you can do a lot of, you know, you can customize all your gear with, you know, various graffiti on your guns that seems very, you know, Space Marines appropriate. You know, there's a lot of, you know, different, you know, lore collectibles you can get that, you know, explain about the backstory of, you know, how the corporations work and things like that. The weapons, you know, flamethrowers feature real prominently. You can also, one of the classes can get the smart gun, which is kind of cool because it also, in effect, allows that to be like if you have someone that, you know, you want to play with but isn't good at first-person shooters, you know, that's a gun that basically auto-aims.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, so you know, it's, you know, very solid. I really appreciate it. There's a lot of nice touches. If you play with bots, the bots are the synthetics.
Oh, literal bots.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so, you know, they look really creepy and you know, their all their gear has like, you know, various you know, kind of bot themed graffiti painted on it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you know, I don't know, resistance is futile, and you know just the type of things you would expect people to graffiti on, that sort of thing.
Of course.
Yeah, so it's, you know, one of those things where I think at the, you know, especially in relation to like Alien Colonial Marines, which was kind of just a like cash grab, this is clearly, in my opinion, a game that they wanted to make, you know, really be a good Aliens game. The biggest downside I would see is, granted, I'm only on the easiest difficulty level because there is, you know, gear scores and stuff, but at least right now, I feel like they could probably stand to, play up just a little bit more, you know, making the aliens more agile and more actively, you know, kind of avoid your gunfire, that sort of thing.
Okay.
They do do a pretty good job of, like, sometimes trying to hide from you and ambush you. And, you know, something that makes that kind of fun is, you know, you have the... you know, from the movies, the motion detectors.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can often see, you know, where, you know, scenarios where you know they're somewhere in the vents, but you don't necessarily know where they're coming from. I guess, in effect, it's basically a game that justifies having what they call a monster closets.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, what's a monster closet?
It's a often derogatory term given in old style, like specifically like first person shooters, where the enemies don't come from like a natural place, like, oh, they would like drop onto the roof from a helicopter and then break in through the windows or whatever. It is just a room or a hallway that is a dead end where they're waiting to attack you, like it's a like a haunted house, or like a room or an object that spawns enemies until you pass it or do something and have them fly out.
Yeah, and in this case, a lot of it is, you know, it'll be like, you know, vents that you can't actually crawl into, but, you know, are designed for the, you know, Xenos to pop out of, that sort of thing.
I mean,
but, you know, like I said, in the context of this game, that's kind of the whole thing, you know?
Well, yeah, and like even like Left 4 Dead, those levels were full of monster closets because they needed places for the director AI. To put enemies that were going to come at you. So I imagine this is trying to work some kind of similar kind of angle. So yeah, if somebody complained about that, I'd be like, come on, really?
yeah. And they even subvert it some. So like you'll have where you'll like pass under a vent and like the vent plate will fall down. And most of the time that means there's a Xeno coming, but sometimes it just is.
Yeah, it's got a cat scare.
Yeah, exactly. So, so overall, pretty solid, not going to be game of the year or anything like that, but, a solid game.
Mm-hmm. Nothing in the Alien and Predator universe, like even like movie wise, but like specifically like game wise, has matched the Aliens versus Predator 2 on PC back in like 2000 or 2001.
Oh yeah,
just amazing. And
I feel like Alien Isolation was a good entry.
Alien Isolation was kind of
on easy mode.
without just too much. I think of Alien Isolation as kind of its own thing. But man, the Marine campaign and Alien vs. Predator 2 was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing I really want to see them do, I guess I'm meaning more with the movies, but whatever, is lean into in the comic books. There's a long-standing, thing with the Aliens versus Predator, crossovers. However, there's also a long-standing, like, four-way crossover between Aliens, Predators, Terminator, and RoboCop.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And I would really love to see someone just make... I want them to get someone to make that movie, but someone who has the right balance of understanding that it's supposed to be stupid... but also understanding that that doesn't mean you can cut corners.
Right, right.
So, that's my dream movie.
but Aliens Fireteam Elite, did you have anything else on that?
So the other thing, I picked up something on Christmas sale. I picked up Far Cry 6.
Okay.
Far Cry N plus 1.
Yeah, but Far Cry 2021, yeah.
Exactly. So this one is basically set in a, legally distinct Caribbean country.
Right.
That
distinct from reality, or?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, apparently, like, in the 70s, fought and won its independence, but then in modern times has had like a dictator get elected and then, kind of take over. And apparently they somehow invented a cure for cancer that they build into the country's cash crop, which is tobacco.
Okay.
But the president is basically using slave labor to produce it, and then also is, I'm still fairly early, it's still kind of unclear, but like fertilizing it with some sort of poisonous substance that apparently also doubles as a chemical weapon.
Okay.
So smoking in this game cures one cancer, but gives you another.
Exactly.
It's a cancer converter.
So it's a wash. It's a cancer wash. Yeah.
Exactly. And that actually, joking aside, was one of the things that has struck me as kind of not unusual, but just not something you normally see, is like pretty much every character in this game smokes heavily.
Okay, yeah.
Which I imagine is likely accurate for like a Caribbean country whose main export is tobacco, but
maybe.
But yeah, it's you know, it's very interesting. It very much leans into kind of the sort of Cold War, you know, almost like the Just Cause series type of feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your characters are, you know, always referred to as guerrillas, and, you know, all of the crazy Far Cry shenanigans and weapons and stuff are justified as being you improvising and, you know, slapping together technologies to, you know, take on this regime.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of in a weird place in that overall it seems somewhat more serious and, you know, a little higher quality in its storytelling.
Than previous entries is what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Particularly since 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's only if you're willing to kind of accept this sort of, you know, fever dream, you know, kind of almost Pulp Fiction take on kind of the revolutionaries. So, you know, it's kind of a, you know, I don't know. So far, it's a very interesting tone. Right now, the first thing you're tasked with is basically uniting the various, you know, revolutionary factions. So one of them is basically a powerful, like, you know, traditional family that's, you know, kind of had their land seized and is fighting back against the government. One of them is a pair of rappers.
Like musicians?
Well, I mean, the justification for it is basically that you need someone to, in effect, be your public face and, you know, that can rally people to your cause, that sort of thing.
Makes sense.
Gotta find a way to tie music into the game.
Yeah, I mean, the music's actually amazing. It's actually the one game recently that I'm kind of want to see if I can if they have a soundtrack that they sell, because it's all from what I can tell, a combination of existing and original rap, mostly in Spanish. So kind of I know nothing of music, but kind of combining the Hispanic kind of Caribbean sound with rap. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's an established genre that I just don't know about. But whatever it is, it sounds very cool.
Yeah.
And then the last faction that I think is my favorite is basically the people that basically the legends of 76, so the people that you know, led the revolution the first time around.
Okay.
And so it's, you know, basically a bunch of people in their 70s that range from like,
oh shit, here we go again.
yeah, range from like that to like, there's one dude that just called like El Tigre that is just like, I mean, it's kind of a stereotype, but it's very much like the old man strength thing.
Okay.
Where he's just like, you know, never stopped being like a crazy revolutionary dude that like wakes up in the morning and does, you know, 1,000 pull-ups and whatever.
Hey, you always got to be ready. Yeah,
it's, I know. My
I always being, stereotype old people like that.
How dare I? But yeah, so, you know, I'm sure there's going to be lots of people on the Twitters or whatever that disagree with me, but at least to me, it seems like a pretty solid, balance between silly and serious.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's kind of depressing. There's a conversation early on with the leader of the Gorillas where you're like, so after we, topple this regime, are you going to like run for president or what's going on? And she's like, oh no, like there is no scenario where this ends in peace. Like our goal is to topple the regime, but what comes after that is almost certainly civil war. Like there is no scenario where there is peace in my lifetime. We just hope that whoever replaces this guy is better. It's like, that's probably fairly insightful, also very dark.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Don't be naive, come on.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What is this, your first revolution?
So, yeah, I mean, overall, very good. Some fun call-outs. The all of your companions, NPC companions this time around are various animals.
Both?
So far I've unlocked El Guapo, which is a alligator wearing a jaunty tracksuit jacket that you can just sick on people. And then Boom Boom, who is the actually the dog from Far Cry 5 that got stuck in a shipping container and sent to the Caribbean.
Oh no.
Oh no.
This is what you have like in instead of the like the mercenaries?
Yeah, exactly.
That's wildly goofy.
Yeah, I mean the both 5 and New Dawn had animals as options for the mercenaries. So like in 5 you could either get a cougar, a bear or a dog.
Okay.
But yeah, this time around much more silly. I know some of the others is a fighting chicken. And apparently some sort of like it's not voodoo because that's not the right religion, but in effect like voodoo cat.
Like a Santeria kind of thing, or
yeah, exactly. That is one thing that I'm kind of surprised they added having the game is I haven't tried it yet, but apparently cockfighting is one of the like mini games.
Oh no,
huh. Which is like
yeah, with like a weirdly smarmy UI over it, right?
I have no idea.
I've seen the GIF/videos on the think pieces about them deciding to include cockfighting.
Yeah,
are examples of how it's like played up as fighting game intros, yada yada.
Oof.
See, I haven't done anything with it yet. I mean, that kind of makes sense considering it is kind of a shocking thing. You know, it's one of those things where like that's probably my understanding is accurate that's fairly popular in a lot of the Caribbean and Latin America, but still
making it into like a system that you can engage in is a strange decision.
I think there's like a Bond movie where there's like the establishing shot when he's like running through an area is people like around a cockfight. So I kind of just feel bad for the Caribbean that it's like, yep, this is what you do, right? Yeah,
this is your and that must have been the opening of Casino Royale. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
It's weird. So the villain in this one is played by Giancarlo Esposito, which is funny because he is a villain in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And the villain in Far Cry 3 is played by somebody who plays a character in Better Call Saul as well. So I just want them to start pulling all of their characters from that show.
Okay. And there are at least a fair number of Breaking Bad like illusions.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
In the game. So I don't know, like you bribe someone to, you know, give you some gear you need for the revolution by giving them a thumb drive containing all the seasons of that American show where the bald guy deals meth.
Wow. Oh no.
Yeah.
So yeah. Also funny is your characters, your character this time around can be male or female, which is cool, and is, you know, either way you're named Danny.
Okay.
Nice.
Which, you know, kind of works with that, but then works even better when you get to the side mission where you team up with Danny Trejo.
Also,
Danny's for life.
Also, yeah, played a minor role in Breaking Bad.
Name of the mission is just Danny and Danny versus everyone.
Wait, is it Danny Trejo playing himself? Or
oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, how weird. This sounds like this is Looney Tunes. This might as well be Saints Row.
Yeah, like yes. I think that's the best way to say it. Is so far, whereas particularly last two, a lot of times, to me, the silliness kind of didn't land. I feel like this time around, it's kind of landing more like Saints Row, where, you know, it seems like they're leaning into it, and, you know, it's just a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, that, yeah. It's
only good things can happen with that, I think.
Yeah. Also, you know, just in terms of, I guess, a good sign of the times, you know, one of the one of your allies is overtly trans, which is cool.
Cool.
And I guess
also named Danny. Really weird choice for the game.
All Dannys. Just it's oops, just oops, Dannys all the way down.
Oops, all Dannys. Yeah.
So yeah. So you know, it seems like they're, you know, doing some better things with the story, hopefully. So yeah, that's got cool.
As the play basically clear all the stuff on the map, go do checkpoints, stealth until it's not, just like it's kind of always been.
Yeah, for the most part.
Are there still radio towers?
There are not radio towers, no. And you level up some to unlock new gear. But then all of the things that were previously perks you'd unlock are now on gear. And it's much more like the Assassin's Creed Valhalla type of approach, where it's not like, hey, let's just grind for gear with better stats. It's like, you know, you'll get one piece of this type of gear that has this specific perk, and then you mix and match to get what you want.
Okay.
They do have a fun, something they added in New Vegas were basically modes where you would go and do a side mission at a completely different map that usually was, you know, something much more extreme. And they bring that back, and this time around it's you basically going and tracking down you know, people that are attempting to sell this chemical weapon on like the black market or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
One of the fun things though is that once you get the weapon, you have to like backtrack through the level. However, the weapon is basically as a protection, I guess. It, you know, has to be stored in like dry ice, or it'll you know, release or whatever. Mm-hmm. And if it gets too hot, there's like a fail safe that will just explode and kill you.
Okay.
So you have to basically run back and, you know, as long as you stick to the shade, it doesn't warm up. And then, you know, at the various camps and stuff, or if you find like a stream, you can submerge in water to like reset the timer. And so it's basically this weird kind of combination of sort of a time attack combined with kind of, you know, strategically figuring out how you're going to route through this level to, you know, get to water to keep resetting the time.
Okay.
So that's, you know, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, that's a new type of mission. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Nice.
Cool.
So are there any other questions? Otherwise, that's all I've got.
I don't have any questions.
That sounds like a good time.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
All right. I'm going to start with an ethical question.
Okay.
Because I played Super Smash Brothers over the break with Luke and Milo. And I didn't let them win the first time that I played with them. And I didn't even think about it. And then Dennis commented, like, man, you just didn't even give him a shot.
I mean, I think that's totally fine. If you're playing Super Smash Bros., that would be different.
Oh, I see. And so there's a rematch, and we didn't talk about it, Dennis, but I was trying to let him win.
I know, rematch. I saw you giving him every chance. sadly, the pits don't care if you're trying to let him win or not. They have a tendency to kill characters regardless.
The character from Kid Icarus Pit, or...
Oh, yep. Damn it. There really is everything.
Choose your words more carefully.
The bottom of the map?
Okay, yeah.
But on the bright side, I unlocked two characters for him, and then in another funny moment when I was talking to Dennis, he said, it's like, yeah, about 5% of the time they're able to like win, and you really just have to bite your tongue every other time.
Yeah.
Not like, hey, does this one count? Hand it to me.
Yeah. No, it's just watch them. Well, and it's like they will, I mean, the AI is set to the lowest because the game knows that it's up against someone that's not super skilled. And so basically it's a punching dummy. Like the computer is not fighting back.
Right.
And they'll get them like 75% and then walk off a cliff.
Oh no.
You could just hold still and mash A. That's all you need to do.
Is it difficulty with like the manual dexterity or just, you know, not quite understanding the game or just not having wasted as much of their life as we have?
I think it's a mix of manual dexterity and then losing where your character is on the screen.
Yeah. Not being eyes on the prize.
They love fighting as the same character, and it drives me wild because I know that's going to confuse them.
Right.
And they figured out how to choose skins, and so they'll go choose skins that aren't even that different, and it leads to just constant walking off of clips.
Oh no!
All of this is to say, Dennis is a very patient father. And
yes.
Props.
I'm not confident that Luke even knows where the jump button is right now. Milo definitely has it because he's a filthy Kirby main.
Mm.
What kind of children are you raising over there?
But yeah, there's some painful moments watching. I mean, it's also hilarious and fun.
A lot of fun. And then also the text Dennis sent me afterwards. Where he's,
yeah.
Hey, what is that guy coming back to play Smash Brothers?
That guy.
Anyway, that was a lot of fun. Besides that, I still have Storybook Brawl. I still have Gloomhaven. That's going as usual. Then I have two new ones. One game that I was able to play on airplanes a lot, and that was a really good travel game, was Link's Awakening for the Switch.
Oh, yeah.
Zelda game.
Did you play the original?
I had never played this as a kid.
Okay.
So I was coming into this fresh. I think, actually, I take that back. I played like the original one for like 30 minutes, but it was like on a friend's console sort of thing and Game Boy. And I didn't get far or anything like that. I didn't get to a dungeon or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool to play. It's interesting to play a game that's like, what, 30 years old now? Something like that.
Yeah.
With like kind of fresh eyes, and like it's one of those things where it's like you can tell that it must have been a really big game when it came out. It doesn't necessarily hit now because like so many, you know, it's like dated, right?
Mm-hmm.
But through the lens of it being a 30-year-old game, it is really impressive. man, it's a really good choice that they have like telephone stations all around the map that tell you where to go next, though. Because I imagine that that was like a huge sticking point. And that's like a really good way to ameliorate a tough thing in a game like this, where the flow of the game is, it's a Metroid type game where, or it's a Zelda game. I should back up. It's a Zelda game. Everyone knows how Zelda works. The I guess it's more Metroid-y than maybe other Zelda entries more explicitly, where it's like there's a lot of blockers you see early on where you don't know how to get around certain things. Mm-hmm. And then each dungeon gives you a weapon that'll unlock one thing. So, for example, there's one that gives you a jump ability so you can jump over holes that are in the landscape that you would normally fall in. So the map slowly opens up more after you each dungeon, but the problem with that is the next place that you need to go, you have to search a bigger and bigger space each time, and so it's kind of harder and harder to remember where you need to go. Mm-hmm. They also give you a sticker system where you can just like mark stickers on the map so that you can basically set reminders for yourself where it's like, oh yeah, here's one area I couldn't get past, but maybe I'll be able to get past it later.
Yeah,
and so you can kind of help yourself out that way. And then basically if I got stuck, I would look up like what to do if I was like completely lost at like, I don't know how to get through this dungeon. Like I don't like, mm-hmm. I've gotten all the keys I can, but I'm at a loss of where I should go next.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And so I did that maybe a handful of times, like 5 times.
Is the non-authentic experience though, because this was a pre-internet game.
Yeah. You have to like talk to your friends, right? Share stories of how to beat someone. And mm-hmm. then you have a bunch of fake stories like you can get to the other side of the dam that you can zoom in on with the sniper gun. There's a way to hack it. I got that.
Yeah.
It's been a fun game to play. I almost don't want to keep playing it because I want to reserve it as like a travel game. Mm-hmm. Because boy, it makes a plane ride go by really quickly, and that is appreciated. I don't know if there's anything to talk about with the game. Has everyone here played it or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I played both versions. Are there still like performance problems? Because I remember, especially playing in portable mode, like there being some like frame rate hitches and weird like texture popping kind of things, which normally I'm not like a real stickler for, but like it was noticeable.
No, I didn't run into any of those things. Yeah. So perhaps they like patched it out,
maybe they fixed it.
Yeah, and a game like this is really interesting where it's like, it's like a remake of a movie. Mm-hmm. Like you have a blueprint of everything you need to do. It's just like, all right, let's just modernize it and build it in like a 3D engine and make, you know, cute assets that are kind of like low work but nice.
It was surprising how faithful they stuck to the original when I played it.
Yeah.
Does it still have the weird side-scrolling levels?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what's that? Oh, I see. Yeah. The part where it changes back to like 2D.
Mm-hmm. It turns into Mario levels with Mario enemies and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like a weird part that I guess was a little amount of crossover between Mario and this. So I guess like Zelda was not like a firmly established franchise at this time.
By this time it was, because this came out after Linked to the Past, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I always assumed that was kind of spoiling or, you know, alluding to the fact that this was a dream.
Yeah, that I always figured that was the case too. That's what made them a little bit more willing to play fast and loose with it.
Crossover. Yeah.
That's my favorite part, is the fact that like you are canonically just killing all of these characters when you win.
Blinking them out of existence. Yeah.
I don't know. It's enjoyable. If you've never played those games, that's like a pretty easy way to get into it, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't think I have much more to say about it than that.
Cool.
And then I have one other new game that I've started, haven't played too much in, but over the break on Steam sale, I got Kingdom Come Deliverance, which is it's like a weird Eastern European RPG type game. I guess I'd always recognize the poster, And I guess it had gotten good reviews, and it was an RPG, so it seemed like it was something that could be interesting. Mm-hmm. So far, it seems pretty promising. I've only gotten through kind of a tutorial type level. Like, if you think of Knights of the Old Republic, like getting to Terrace, like I've gotten that far, essentially.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But it does seem promising. Like, it has basically like four stats that you look after. As far as like RPG stuff, you get 2 points at the beginning, so it's maybe a little bit more reserved than something like a D&D start. Mm-hmm. With like strength, charisma, whatever. And this one, it's like you have, I think it's like vitality, strength, speech, and one other thing, but I forget what it is. Hmm. Like agility, I think. I think agility. And like you have a few like random missions around town that kind of, you know, put the mechanics under your feet. The part that's kind of weird is unlike the Far Cry game, you playing a very specific character. So you're playing like a white male character set in this time period, and like everything is kind of set in stone in that sense.
You're like a Polish, like a Polish peasant, right? Like you've got a family.
Yeah. The setup is like your father, blacksmith, you're helping do chores at the beginning of the game, and that's like giving you a reason to run around the town and talk to a bunch of people. It's on one hand, it's trying to give context for the time period where it's like it's showing people being prejudiced towards German people. But then on the other hand, there's kind of some like really eye-rolly moments where it's like every woman in the town wants to have sex with you sort of thing. There's a shot of the game that's like on a woman's butt as she's walking away, and it's like, I don't know. It's kind of like, I don't know, dumb humor, I guess, in those moments, or I'm not sure. I don't know.
Just tonally hard to get a lock on what lane they're trying to be in. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like maybe like an immaturity of video game making, or it's like, okay, I don't know. Are you making like a joke or something here? I don't know. Like, but it's just kind of weird.
You're leering. That's what you're doing. You're leering.
Yeah. But like the RPG mechanics seem cool, so I'm going to still like keep with it. The story actually isn't bad either. Like they try and do more compelling things with the story, and so we'll see where it goes. But yeah, so I'm going to keep playing it, but it does feel like a very big game. It feels like I'm only just dipping my toe in the water right now. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
That's all I got.
Cool. I've got two. The first one, I finished Metroid Dread.
Sweet.
I regret to tell you that I do not like this game very much.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep behind the curtain. I got that game as well, but I haven't played that.
Sorry. Sack of
game.
Okay. Take my comments about it as not so much like a warning, or feel free to disagree with me, please. But this is this is kind of me just reacting to it, and coming from a point of view where I really wanted to like it. So I talked about this a little bit before, this is a game that makes a very good first impression, because this is the best that movement has felt in the series to me, and the best that fighting has felt. So like, it is incredibly snappy, to get around. Samus is very mobile. And you end up, combat tends to be fast and relatively high stakes. And early on, when you're in the kind of gray science tube area, you think, okay, yeah, like this is just the first one. Surely it can't all be gray science tube. A lot of the world is gray science tube. And so like getting around and doing stuff feels very good. But for a Metroid game to have a world that feels as anonymous as it is, backfires in a really big way, which is I kind of never knew where I was supposed to be going. Like, yeah. kind of like you described, Ben, with the older, this 30-year-old Zelda game, right? And I'm not sure, I'm not saying that I want it to be like Metroid Fusion or like Metroid Other M, where it is very clearly like signposted, like, hey, you know, go here, and it restricts you into being like in a place. That's an overcorrection, right? That isn't where it needs to be. But like in the best Metroid games, you know, Super Metroid and Metroid Zero Mission, right? You just kind of like you can intuit where you need to go. Whereas in this, I just kind of felt myself like backtracking over and over places, like unsure of where I had been, like the map wasn't that big of a help, like that kind of stuff. And that's a very bad feeling, right? Feeling lost and, you know, being unsure, you know, like there's a whole stretch in like the first third of the game or so where you need to route power. Like there's like thermal energy you need to route to like unfreeze particular rooms and open up new paths. And there's not really an indication on your map of like where the heat is going, and it changes places, but there's not an indication of like, you know, where that's going to go. Cause you can follow the pipe a little bit, but then it disappears, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just ended up feeling just like really disconnected from it, and a lot of time just kind of, you know, pressing at the seams trying to find a place to go, and ultimately breaking down and being like, all right, I'm gonna like just look up a YouTube of this, and then just kind of like go back, you know, look for the place where they're past where I'm at, and then just kind of jump back 30 seconds each time until I see like the door that they opened or something like that.
After seeing you play games enough on streams, I can imagine that sort of frustration.
Yes. Yeah. It's just, it is a uniquely, it is a feeling that I do not like. It is one of the things that really gets under my skin, when a game does that. Additionally, so the sequences, the stealth sequences with the Emmy, the EMMI, those robots, that are chasing after you, those were out there welcome pretty quick to me, actually, because, you know, like it's instant death, and they catch you, and you can run away, but like oftentimes what it would end up being is, okay, all right, I got spotted, so I'm going to run back to the same spot, wait for the alert to go down, and then jump back in and then give it a shot. Oh crap, I was seen. Gonna run back out and try again. It was an awful lot of just kind of like doing the same thing over and over, you know? And yeah, if they're trying to make it tense, repetition undercuts the tenseness, and you know, instant death is not a motivating punishment, let's say.
Like Alien Isolation on normal difficulty.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just curious. How would you compare this to, like, my understanding was that instant death would death. Yeah, you just immediately can't hear.
Okay.
instant death was kind of a mainstay of survival horror.
No, bad survival horror. punishes you with instant death. You know, usually like you know,
Silent Hill prolonged like red heartbeat.
Yeah.
Instead
yeah.
of instant death.
Mm-hmm. You know, just it'll punish you and strain your resources. But like the trick for any of the games like this is to like take more care of you than you think they're taking care of you. You know, basically it just like, okay, you're dangling me over the ledge, but there's a net that I can't see. Right. You know, so like one of my big problems with like the Evil Within, the first Evil Within, actually I like the second Evil Within quite a bit. But the first one was just instant death all over the place. Big enemies that will chase you and pursue you. And when they catch up to you, you die. As compared to like, say, Nemesis, where you don't want Nemesis to like get you and hit you, because it'll take a lot of damage off of you, but you can be hit like four or five times by Nemesis, without dying, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Whereas when one of these Emmys gets you, you know, spots you, and like eventually they start being able to see through walls and stuff.
Oh no! Yeah. Oh, that's. How do you do stealth with something that can see through walls?
You get like an ability to turn invisible relatively early on, but it uses energy. And once that energy is out, it starts drawing from your health. So Yeah, there's a way to counter it, but also like when there is something that can see through walls, and also it has a longer range of sight than you do, then like your camera will show you.
Health.
Yeah. And when one of these things gets you, it chases after you, and you have two chances. There's a little cutscene where it like pins you down, and that like there are two chances to, if you perfectly time the melee counter, you will be able to get away. But like in the roughly 10 hours that I spent playing this game, I think that I only managed to make that happen like 5 times, and that was all within the last third of the game. Yeah, it is not something that you can guarantee, because it's not the same timing every time. They vary it up like really subtly.
See, that in itself seems like kind of poor gameplay.
Yeah.
I guess to their credit, it seems like they effectively made a video based off of Metalhead, the Black Mirror episode, and that's kind of cool.
I haven't seen that episode. What is the concept of that?
You should see that episode after we stop recording, because that's like one of the best episodes that they've made. I'll find the link.
Yeah, I've got Netflix, so I can fire it up. I haven't watched very much Black Mirror. And then just like my other complaint is just that the way that they make bosses difficult is that they give them more HP more often than not. There's a lot of like boss repetition. We're going to be caught in with kind of a basically the same enemy. It's a bunch of HP sponges. So like that's my kind of like list of complaints, and I mostly ended up like finishing it out of spite. Is what I ultimately have to say. At the time, I thought that it was like, yeah, like maybe there's just a time, you know, like maybe there's just a doldrums in this, like maybe it'll like get back onto its feet in the back forth. But no, unfortunately, no. Yeah, so I'm sorry to I hope you enjoy it, Ben, but if you go in expecting that, then it will end up
exceed. I will go with trepidation.
Any questions about Metroid Dread?
No, I think you covered it.
Yeah. The other one, and this is one that I can't talk about very much just because of the nature of the game, because it is very story heavy, but I played and beat Life is Strange Before the Storm.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. What a delight. Yeah. So I like the original Life is Strange. But it does kind of have some problems. It feels like with the time rewinding feature, they just kind of weren't able to like either deal with that either in story or in play in a really meaningful way. This doesn't have the time manipulation. It ends up being kind of just more of a kind of standard slice of life cinematic adventure game, with very, you know, very light supernatural kind of stuff that's going on, and I think that it really benefits from that. So this is the prequel to the original Life is Strange. I'm really curious. This is part of an effort. I want to play Life is Strange 2 and then True Colors, just because I don't know. I think that I'm in on all this teen drama, I guess. But this is the one where you're playing as Chloe, kind of the secondary protagonist of the of Life is Strange 1. And you're playing, and it is kind of showing her developing her relationship with Rachel, the person who went missing, and is kind of the like your search for what happened to Rachel is the impetus for the things that happen in the original Life is Strange. So this is Chloe after Max has left and after her dad has passed away. And she's just an incredibly troubled girl, and ends up hitting it off with Rachel. This is shorter. This is 3 episodes. And I gotta say that the third episode, like the pacing on it's kind of strange. But like Chloe is an amazing protagonist to play as, because she is just a complete punk and it is fun to play as a punk and kind of feel your own attitude kind of going from like fuck the world and fuck this authority to when the, you know, when things end up getting serious, like deciding, okay, like what actually has gravity and what should I be respecting and what, you know, kind of matters to my version of this character. Is real good, and the characterization and writing is good enough that like that doesn't feel forced, you know, when that gravity starts kind of kicking in. And it is not just, you know, you're making basic choices or whatever to replace the time manipulation stuff. What you end up having is I forget what they call it, but the it's like a sass back system or a talk back system. So there are encounters.
Please let it be the sass back system.
I mean, that's what I called it in my head. But there are encounters, you know, like with people where you're trying to get past them or, you know, get them to give you what you want, where it starts almost into like a it's almost like the insult sword fighting from Secret of Monkey Island. Except you're not like collecting the answers to the, you know, to the questions. But what is happening is you get like a little like almost like life meter at the bottom, showing like how close you are to your goal and how close the other person is. And in the conversation, like they'll say something and then you get four options based on like words or like what they brought up. And like you have to pick your rebuttal based on like what will put them in their place. So and it's very like limited time as you're putting this in. So like you're trying to figure out like what is the most cutting thing I could say right now to advance and make this person feel like they don't have any room in this conversation. And like
that's awesome.
You like, do you have a result to just like insulting their appearance?
Yeah, sometimes.
Oh, no. So did it work? Was it super effective?
Sometimes it was and sometimes it wasn't. You know.
Craziness. So is it always though being abrasive or whatever is the right call, or are there characters that just won't work on?
There are different tactics that you take, and one of the things that they do is like they change the context in which you do it, that make it so that you're not always, you know, just kind of being an insolent little shit, you know. Like as the story gets more serious, you end up using it for different outcomes, and it's pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah. So I like this quite a bit. It was fun to go back to that world, and I think Chloe is an amazing character, and it was neat to get to spend more time with her, even though they made this at a time when the voice actors were on strike, so it's not Ashley Birch doing the VO like she did in the original. It's a different person who does a good job still, but you know. Yeah. So any questions about Life is Strange Before the Storm?
No, I'm just looked up on Wikipedia like all the releases. So it seems like they release everything like every 2 years or so, every 1.5 to 2 years.
Just about. Yeah.
That's sweet.
Mm-hmm. And Ben, thank you for the escape simulator. I did the tutorial earlier today, but that would be a fun one, I think, to play multiplayer.
So, fun fact, you do not have a public wish list, so you gotta shoot in the dark and see if it shows up on there.
yeah no, I just did for my privacy stuff because I don't want people seeing what I'm playing for shows.
Oh, that's fair.
this is neat. It was like it's an escape room simulator kind of deal, think it is promising. So yeah, sweet. That's all. And that was a supersized what we've been playing, but I think it was earned.
It's like it was 3 weeks worth of it.
Something about, yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, so speaking of being quippy, we've got a headline-focused question. You've magically gotten a peek into the future, and you see a recap of the biggest gaming headlines of 2022. So what headlines stood out to you the most?
And I'll get started here. Greg says, 25 AAA games released in 2022, 23 unfinished at launch. Gamers still spend $100 to buy game and DLC.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah, no, that'll happen, just because that's what it'll bear. Ben, what does Gwillem say?
Golem says, Kojima admits Death Stranding was one long shitpost.
I mean, first off, shitposting is art. And also, Death Stranding is good. Sorry, Willem.
Yeah, it's a good shitpost.
Yeah. David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, Square Enix CEO admits to data breach. Says in public statement, help, my ape is stolen.
that was Eli. That was Eli. Yeah, sorry, I was looking at the wrong thing in the order. Yes, Eli says.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, yeah. Eli. Yeah.
Square Enix CEO admits to data breach, says in public statement, help, all apes are gone. Oh man, I am so happy. Those people getting what's coming to them. Let's see. Dennis, what does Ollie say?
Dolly's got two. One I think is realistic. That's him saying it. Nintendo announced new underpowered console with gimmick and four first-party games that were originally announced for Switch release in 2023. Pre-sales at all-time high. Mm-hmm. And what I would like, gamers file class action lawsuit against Nintendo for using nostalgia and false promises to hold them in abusive relationship for the last four generations. He adds, they are the company equivalent of Peter Molyneux.
Hi, I'd like to report some shots fired. Man. Yeah. Can't go with you there, but I appreciate the passion. Sean says, Xbox brings Game Pass to the Nintendo Switch. If only. That would be wild. I'm just like, yeah, no, just it's the cloud version, but why not? There you go. I mean,
sure.
Nobody would let that happen. But yeah. Let's see. Ben, what does Case say?
Kirby and the Forgotten Land wins Game of the Year from the Game Awards, Polygon, and Kotaku.
Hey.
Dark Horse.
Nothing saying it can't happen. Let's see. David, what does Tyler say?
Tyler says, gaming canceled. Scientists determine we already have too many games.
Yeah, no. So you're not allowed to buy any new games until you beat the ones you have.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think we needed any games once Warframe was made. So,
rounding it out here, Dennis, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, Area Man disgusted to find microtransactions in local arcade games. Complains on multiple cop podcasts, and then following up, local idiots hope for NFTs.
Also following up, Area Man is cool.
So I complained about microtransactions and arcade stuff?
I didn't know that existed.
No,
is that
a thing? Yeah, you put quarters in the machine
to get more time. Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I don't know that I've complained about it on multiple podcasts. I do think that I don't know. NFT stuff is it's a scam. I don't want people to be scammed, but there we are. And also, it's lighting the planet on fire, cloud. I'll do mine and be hopeful. All game developers unionize. Every publisher and studio is now employee owned.
Ooh, that'd be good.
I don't think that's happening. It would be cool if it happened.
Yeah, if it wasn't,
I mean, like realistically, I think that we're going to be seeing a lot more big publisher just dirty laundry being put out. I think that even a lot more people's faves are going to be in the crosshairs, and we have to be ready to reckon with that.
Hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
God of War, the second one comes out, and like God of War 2, it's kind of the same game as the first one, but slightly worse. And they'll probably make a couple more that are slightly worse here, and they'll have to reboot it in a few years.
I think that's slightly worse.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
And the cycle stand continues. The cycle continues. Yeah. David.
Man, I don't want to think about the future. I think most realistic is just headline is just fuck.
Yeah.
That's true.
I know. I think I'd go with Molyneux and David Cage team up to make NFTs.
So Molyneux has already kind of announced that he's going to do NFT shit. So that is absolutely the case. I don't know that that David Cage or Quantic Dream are getting involved. I think that would be a publisher level decision with EA.
I just feel like those are the two biggest con men in gaming.
So. Yeah.
I just love that every company is like, we're doing NFT stuff. So where does the money start showing up? Is that just need our account number?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, give me your credit card number. I also need the three on the back. It's very important that I get the three on the back.
We're going to make it into an NFT.
The NFT thing is probably the most clear example of Dunning-Kruger I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Just in terms of, like, I think NFTs are dumb, but I basically understand how they work. Whereas it seems like all of the, so many of the advocates I see just don't even understand what they are.
No. And they're describing, like, all these things that they can do, but it's just, they're just describing things that already exist. You know, oh, you're just describing Git. Oh, you're describing a website. That's a PDF. That's a movie.
Right. Yeah. Like my favorite is the people that don't realize that NFTs don't give you ownership over a piece of art.
Right, right. You can't turn around. It's not a license to, you know, to make derivative works off of it. Yeah.
Right. And so, like, we'll accuse people of stealing their art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that that's the true function of it, is NFTs give people mechanism to try and make legal lawsuits against other people. How can we sue people over stuff like this?
I don't know. You all you need to know about the people excited for NFTs.
Yeah.
See, the I don't know, this is, I've lost faith in humanity. So my completely cynical take is I think NFTs are a good thing because they transfer money from stupid people to slightly less stupid people.
I would be comfortable. I would be comfortable if it was just rich people scamming rich people, but they're being sold as speculative investments for people who don't have the money to gamble.
I was about to say, technically casinos are the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I just feel like humanity's, you know, working its way out of existence anyways, you know.
We want to slow it down.
I want to go on an extreme tangent here, where one of the books I was reading over Christmas, like the countries, so it goes like, it's like a chapter devoted to each one.
To what? I'm sorry, you kind of cut out.
Sorry, the Nordic countries, so like Sweden, Iceland, that sort of thing, Denmark. But one of the things, it's just like all these things are such foreign concepts where it's like, imagine a society where everyone like inherently trusts one another and like doesn't think that the other person next to him is trying to scam them from anything. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, wow, what an idea.
Functioning society.
Yeah. I think one of the weirdest things about, you know, living in dramatically different parts of the country is seeing the significantly different ways that different parts of the country will scam you.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's definitely, there's a big difference between New York City and the South in terms of, like, you know, like most companies, you know, most businesses will try to do right by you down here. And, like, you know, you can actually pretty much, you know, trust employees to, like, try to be helpful, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the moment it gets to any sort of collective action type thing, like with COVID, mm-hmm. like doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, New York is the complete opposite. You know, everyone will try to scam you, but also will work together for the common good.
Oh, I think we haven't done Dennis's yet. Dennis, what's yours?
Oh, mine. So Bethesda reveals that past 3 years were all an elaborate ARG promotion for the next Fallout game.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've got some complaints that I would like to lodge at them for some of the choices they made.
It kind of got away from them.
I mean, yeah, they had to have started in 2016.
Yeah. Yeah. Just weird that Bethesda was the puppet masters all along. Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for writing in. To participate in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for putting this one up.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are exciting in the world of video games. David, you posted yours in here first, I believe. What are those modders doing, and why?
Yeah, so partially, I'm going to need some help from you guys explaining some of this stuff.
Okay.
So apparently, they are modding... someone has modded Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII to make him into Ronald McDonald.
Yeah.
So it's basically an animu dude with clown face paint.
Yeah. It's
very off-putting.
Extremely. He's kind of got Juggalo kind of face paint going, and the ketchup red hair. Yeah, so this is called the Sephiroth mod put up on Nexus.
That's good. That started with the name.
It did. So yes.
That's, and then that gets into what I want some help with. Like, my understanding of Sephiroth is like that's the term for the different characteristics of God in Kabbalah.
Yeah.
Like, how does that translate to like edgelord looking emo dude, emo animu dude?
So I think that I can give you the actual serious answer to this. The flippant answer would be just like with Shin Megami Tensei, there's a certain amount of appropriation is the wrong word, but just like, hey, this is a cool sounding word and concept, let's just throw it in and use it. Kind of deal. Sephiroth is a super soldier who is made with cells from a celestial being called Genova that crashed into the world on a comet or on a meteor, you know, and has been starting to devour it from the inside. And there are multiple versions of Sephiroth. Like those cells, like there's like the one guy who was made as an artificial human with them, but like any of the other soldiers who were modified with those cells, he can exert control over them. So if you consider the Genova kind of eldritch horror thing to be God, Sephiroth is one aspect, and then there are all these other soldiers that he is you know, exerting control over.
Okay, so is this like a Lovecraftian type thing?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I was going to say, like, that sounds honestly kind of silly.
Yeah.
But no, okay, I see. Like, I was thinking, like, little green men crashing into the world. Okay.
No, yeah, like just and like it crashed in ancient times and has been kind of hollowing the world out, feeding off the life stream. And Sephiroth is he wants to take all of the power and then kind of go and ruin another world as its god. Yes. I apologize for going into way too much depth on that.
Oh, no, that's exactly what I asked for.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, just these are mods for the PC version, and some of these are pretty funny to look at. Let's see here. Mine, speaking of mods, Resident Evil 4 was released for Oculus, I guess Meta Quest 2. I got the Quest 2 headset. And I have played around with Resident Evil 4 in VR. It's neat, but I didn't play enough of it to talk about in the grind.
You're not just a basic functional question. You're not put into, well, maybe you are. Are you put into a first person perspective, or is it still following over the shoulder?
It's first person. You are Leon.
Okay.
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah. It's neat. It's hard. It's harder than the original, which is weird because you're actually like aiming a gun as opposed to controlling a crosshair. anyway, there has been there have been two mods put out. So there are now VR mods for Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3, the remakes, specifically the PC versions. that have come out. And yeah, you can download them and play them. And I'm very curious. These are uploaded to Upload VR, I believe is what it is, which is a site that I believe puts together VR mods and VR games and things like that. Yeah, but playing first person in those very scary games seems kind of cool, and I am curious to give it a shot. So
are these things that are, I don't know, authorized, or are these something that are inevitably going to be shut down by Capcom?
I mean, it would be strange if Capcom shut it down, because like, this is not a whole new product. This is literally just like a front end for you to play this game in VR. So it's unauthorized, but like I can't think of an avenue for Capcom to shut it down aside from like issuing a cease and desist, which would be weird, because like that would be, I mean, there are so many mods for RE2 specifically, like, you know, there's the mods that turn Mr. X into Thomas the Tank Engine, or you know, make it play X gonna give it to you when he's getting close to you, that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'm curious how it works. I'm sure it's janky to some degree, but I don't know, it might be fun to run around the Raccoon City Police Department in first person like that, and I'm curious, so I would I'm going to give that a shot. Yeah. Let's see, Dennis, keep us on the VR tip. What's going on over at Sony?
Yeah, this came out like as we were recording, so I had to switch up my story, and I'm very excited. We all knew it was coming, PlayStation VR 2, but it is now officially confirmed by Sony, with a name and more details on the headset and everything. Or I guess the name is confirmed. We knew it was coming already.
Yeah.
The details about the headset that have been rumored, but that they locked in, is that it's going to be a 4K display. Which I find interesting means 2,000 pixels per eye.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that's how you measured it, but then I thought about it, and I was like, well, I guess on a normal TV, it's technically 2,000 pixels per eye, so fine.
Yeah.
A bunch of other details, like 110-degree field of view, yada, yada. It is a headset-based controller tracking and you know, head tracking versus
that is original such a PSVR. Good. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, instead of needing to set up a camera and calibrate that way, it just tracks everything from inside the house. And then there are also, and this was the surprising one to me, the new sensory features. So they built haptic feedback into the headset, meaning that it's a single motor, it's rumble, but you are going to feel the car accelerating or bullets whizzing by your head. Same way controller rumble works, just now attached to your head.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what I think about that, you know. It feels like a recipe to make something that is prone to motion sickness and headaches even more prone to it.
I mean they can probably accomplish a lot with a little, is what I would imagine.
Yeah
I just approve of the cyberpunk future where when you're losing, it physically punishes you.
Yeah. I'm not sure how aggressive the rumble can get.
Yeah.
Although if the strength of the DualSense 5 or whatever they're called controllers is to be taken as an indicator, it'll be able to shake you up pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So look forward to stories about PSVR 2 CTEs coming soon.
that would be wild. I want to see the controllers, and I'm also curious what the eye tracking means for this.
Oh, good news. So you can see the controllers.
Ooh.
Those were actually announced in March. I'll put them in our Slack.
They look like wiffle balls.
Yes.
Ooh.
It's pretty crazy looking, like but they've got a lot of functionality, like they can do finger tracking, adaptive triggers like the main controllers have, and all sorts of crazy stuff. And you mentioned eye tracking, though, which this is really interesting. So I had heard about eye tracking within a VR headset. I don't know if it was a Sony event or some other thing, but they talked about it from the developer side.
Mm-hmm.
And where if you can have eye tracking inside of the helmet, you can render things that the player is not looking at lower, allowing you to make the game overall seem higher res, because you can divert resources to where the player is looking.
Yeah.
That was the dev facing reason. I totally get that. That makes sense. When they talk about it in the blog here, that is the consumer facing announcement, they talk about it from a gameplay standpoint. So you can interact more intuitively. You can have heightened emotional response, all this stuff. It makes it sound like, hey, we're going to use eye tracking as part of the game mechanics. And I can only imagine some kind of weeping angel, do not look at, thing, that is absolutely terrifying. But yeah, that is another angle on it that I hadn't considered before, that in addition to just saving computing power and helping games look prettier, mm-hmm. This could be treated as a gameplay mechanic, which would be interesting.
I don't think you properly considered all the dystopian ways this could be used.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think the most obvious is, marketing, research, that sort of thing.
Oh, sure.
But, likewise, it would be really easy to put in some attractive models and, out someone's sexuality based on what they look like.
Gosh.
There are so many ways this is a bad idea.
I'm sorry, Hal. I can't let you out of the closet. I'm sorry, Dave.
Hal does on his own time is his own business.
That's literally none of my concern.
This is a complete tangent, but when I was in college, I was in a business program, and we took a field trip essentially over to some P&G offices where they had eye tracking research. Mm-hmm. They did a demo and invited one of the students to, like, hey, look at this bottle. We were in the UK. It was part of our travel. And it was fairy dish soap, which we don't have over here, but if you've ever seen it, it's like the green bottle. It's got a little like cherub angel thing on it. Have you guys ever heard of fairy?
No.
Okay. Well, you can Google it fairly easily, but yeah, so it's got this baby on the logo, a kind of cherub thing. And so he's like, okay, so just look at this, just look, whatever comes natural, and, we'll analyze it. So they run it. And it comes back, and he is laser focused on this angel cherub in a diaper type of thing's hands.
Okay.
And the guy's like, well, everyone's like, what? What happened there? Like, does not look anywhere else, doesn't look at the logo, doesn't look for any of the information, just laser focused on the hands.
Who is this that it's tracking?
One of our classmates.
Okay.
And so he's kind of like, okay, well... I guess we'd interpret from this that maybe the positioning of the hands is interesting, and we might adjust that if it's pulling too much. He kind of rolled with it. And afterwards, we get out of the room, and of course, everyone's like, what were you doing, dude? That's so weird. And he's like, I was not going to let eye tracking catch me looking at that baby's diaper.
Yeah. No, that's...
There was no way in hell, even for half a second,
yeah,
I was going to get it on there.
That's smart.
He locked onto the hands and did not waver.
Mm-hmm. No, he outthought the machine. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, yeah, that's why everyone in the future wears sunglasses.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, yeah.
Oh,
anyway,
man.
PSVR 2 coming to control your mind soon.
Yeah, I'm curious about it. I think that it'll be sold on exclusives, are there actual games made for it?
Oh.
But I'm curious.
That varies. Yeah, another big lead, which is they announced a new Horizon game to in VR. So Horizon Call of the Mountain is the name of the game.
Huh.
So coming out alongside Horizon Forbidden West, they showed just a very brief clip, a giant machine walking across someone's path. They had a VR crossover for The Last Guardian.
Mm-hmm.
That was really, really underdone and, it was a VR tech demo. And I'm kind of wondering if this is mostly the same thing, not really a full game, just a VR tech demo. That's okay. I'm up for a cool Horizon experience in VR.
There's potential there because firing a bow and arrow in VR is one of the funnest things you can do in VR.
Mm-hmm. Hyper satisfying.
Yeah.
See, I feel like they really missed a chance on the name. They could have gone with Call of the Void.
So that's the one game they've talked about so far. It'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah. And Ben, how about you? What's your story?
Yeah, I thought this would be a good bookmarking of the last podcast we did, where it's just an article of like 50 games that are coming out in the coming year, whereas the last one was articles that have games that have come out in the past year. Mm-hmm. 2022 looks pretty awesome, guys. There's a new Firaxis game coming out at some point, like the Marvel one. There's a new game by the director of Limbo and Inside coming out.
Mm-hmm.
There's a game called Starfield coming out, which Todd Howard says, quote, think of it like Skyrim in space.
That's kind of what he has to say. Yeah,
I will press that Skyrim button and print some more money.
I will eat my hat if Starfield comes out in 2022.
Okay.
That hat will be a hamburger that I place in my head for a moment.
Wear hats.
Yeah, so
that's a next level premise.
Yeah.
Hey, why do you have a hamburger on your head?
so I don't
I'm
have
playing
to
the long con.
Yeah, so I don't have to eat something made of felt and metal.
Okay.
And then also Suicide Squad, the next game from the Arkham studio, is going to come out. Rocksteady.
Nice. Yeah. I am excited about Choo Choo Charles. No,
yep.
It looks
Thomas Terror Engine.
Yeah. And obviously Elden Ring. That'll be a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. Nightingale is on this list. That was announced at the Game Awards and looks dope as hell.
Ollie World. Man, I did not realize how much I was waiting for a new Ollie game.
A Harry Potter game, a new Zelda game, mm-hmm. Kirby game, a God of War game. Gotham Knights game. So at least one of the Batman games should be good.
Yeah. Slime Rancher 2. F yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of hits.
Yeah.
Ghostwire Tokyo.
Stalker 2 coming out without NFTs.
Yep. No, that's good. Oh, man. Gotta love the backlash. Yeah. I'm excited. And like this list, it's a list on Polygon. Like, man, just how much of this is indie or indie scale? Like, mm-hmm. not very much of this is like full AAA stuff, and that's exciting. Yeah, nice.
Rise of the AA.
I love AA. Give me modest products. Yeah. Well, how do you all feel about bundling it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you everybody for tuning in. This has been a fun episode. We're coming up on 400, which is cool. As we said at the beginning, if you want to vote in the title of the year, that poll will be going up. Look at our social media presence to see there. We'll give you a couple weeks to do that and announce the winners by the end of the month. But that'll be a good time. Otherwise, you know, the stuff you can do to support us, you can leave ratings or reviews, you can tell your friends, you can back on Patreon. All of this is good stuff that we appreciate. Is there anything I'm forgetting big?
Get your vaccine.
Yes, please. If you have not yet, consider doing so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You made me realize if someone has listened to all 400 episodes, they've spent, 1,200 hours with us?
I mean, the finished episodes usually end up being about, they end up being about 90 minutes to 2 hours usually. So it'd be probably around like 700, probably.
700 Still, that's hours? Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you. Try not to think about those numbers too much, because
it's 3 times more than the number of hours I've played on Warframe.
Well, that's even starker. Oh man. So I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams are going to be starting up here this weekend again on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia at Deck of Wonders on Instagram, and saying that makes me remember Deck of Wonders print and play files are available now. So you can go and actually play the full game. You just have to print it yourself.
Fantastic.
So it's available on itch.io. if you just want the print and play, or if you want to back the full game on GameFound, you get the print and play files for free.
Nice.
I'm very disappointed that it is not referred to as Itch.io.
It feels like it has to be called Itch.io. I first heard it called Itch.io by the Idle Thumbs guys, and yeah, I refuse to call it anything else, actually. So
I didn't know there was a right way to say that.
I don't know.
I stand corrected and humbled.
Yeah, we're an Itch.io family here on this podcast.
Itch.io and Smash Bros.
David?
I'm David.
Attaboy. And Ben.
I'm Ben.
And stick around for some titles. We need to talk about your guys' attitude. Oh, man.
There's a carbon monoxide leak on the podcast.
2022, and they think they can get all sassy.
Oh, man. I only have one.
We're just building up our, what's it, our sass meter?
Yeah. I only have one. I just have it in my hamburger hat, but that's just because I realized I didn't write anything down. So, who has titles? Dennis.
Yes. So I've got Hindsight is 2021.
Okay.
I have my personal favorite, Lordy Lordy Sword and Boardy.
Oh God. Okay.
And then I also have Slightly Worser.
Slightly Worser. Okay.
So I had Swordy Boardy.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly by whatever you referred to, the SAS meter or whatever, I thought that was pretty good.
Does SAS back meter?
Yes.
I wrote down Lordy Lordy something in Boardy because I couldn't remember what it was and then it afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else?
I had nothing else.
Yeah, Lordy Lordy Sword and Boardy has to be it, I think. By votes.
I mean, if we're a democracy, I guess.
We don't always go with the votes, but it feels pretty clear to me.